You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Casey. I'm thrilled today to welcome to our conversation Cindy Cox Roman. Cindy is a market researcher, gerontologist, and founder of Witt Consulting LLC, a strategic research firm based in Washington, D.C. She works with clients to bring the voice of older people to design of products, services, and systems. As of October 1st, Cindy became the interim CEO of HelpAge USA, the only U.S. nonprofit that is exclusively focused on the well-being and inclusion of older people in low- and middle-income countries. Earlier in her career, Cindy headed up the New York custom research practice of Yankelevich Partners, a social trend research firm studying the attitudes and opinions of the American public and business leaders. Before that, as a vice president at Y&R, she led the development of consumer insights and strategy for global advertising campaigns. She also helped establish the company's first office in Budapest, Hungary, soon after the Berlin Wall came down in the early 1990s. Cindy holds a bachelor's degree from the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University and a master's degree in gerontology from the University of Southern California. Recently, she's been conducting independent research on older people and personal agency, or the idea of being in the driver's seat of your life. She's passionate about this topic and is here to talk more with us about it today. Cindy, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Joe. Happy to be here.
So the people who are listening to this podcast have just heard your bio, and I'm sure they're interested in hearing more about your story. How did you first become interested in gerontology?
Good question. I would say that there were two big influences. One is that I became interested many years ago in what causes or what makes certain people seem to stay really engaged and active and thrive and grow as they age, while other people tend to become more passive and sort of almost fade away. So I had a kind of a laboratory experiment right in front of me, in the sense that I was good friends with an older colleague who, after his business career, extended into doing a lot of social entrepreneurialism. And into his early 90s, he was very active in coming up with different ways to make the world a better place. And I was fascinated by his energy and his enthusiasm. And of course, I wanted to be like him, but I thought, how can he turn out to be so different than somebody else who might see those decades after the 60s as being much more of a plateau than a real growth? So that was one thing. And then importantly, I worked in advertising and market research for many years. And it was always very typical to what we call in the survey research business, terminate a respondent when they were over the age of 54. So there would be these age categories of 18 to 34 and 35 to 54, et cetera. And people would be terminated, basically told, thank you, but we're not interested in your opinion. We won't continue with the survey, because most marketers were not interested in the opinions of people over the age of 55. And frankly, we didn't think much about it. But looking back, of course, that was the seeds of ageism and how things were done. And that still continues to a certain extent. But the other tendency that I saw was to lump everyone together. So if you were, you know, it was 55 plus, so it might include people of all ages, but then it would be everybody 55 plus or 60 plus would be lumped in the same category, regardless of whether you were 60 or whether you were 106. And of course, you would never do that with younger people. You would never lump a 20-year-old together with a 50-year-old or 60-year-old, but there's this idea that there isn't much difference when you get older. So I want to know, well, what exactly are the differences? You know, we know that there are health differences and financial differences that can impact later life, but I want to know more about the psychology. What is it like when somebody's in their 60s, and how are people different versus somebody in their 90s? What's it like emotionally? So what are all the things that happen during those stages that we tend to think of as just one big block of time?
So I know you are involved in a lot of research on people in their 50s and 60s. What themes have emerged?
So I have been conducting several stages of research to better understand, starting with people in their 50s and 60s and then older. And it is a work in progress, but I'll share some themes that have come out, which are also supported by other academic research, et cetera. And they're very clear and they're very compelling. A major theme is a disconnect between what we often hear about people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, et cetera. That this is a time when you really know yourself, you have life figured out, you have a lot of self-confidence. You see these quotes all the time in interviews with celebrities and things like that. And certainly there can be a lot of that. But there is a disconnect between that and the reality that for a lot of people, this can be a time of great uncertainty. And that's not talked about as much. So in a first research study that I did, I talked qualitatively to primarily women, but also some men about this time in their life. And one thing I said, a typical research question is, if there were three words to describe this time in your life, what would they be? And it was a wide variety of things, but one consistent theme made it clear that this is what I'd call an untime, because the words that people tended to consistently use to describe this time in their life were words like unpredictable, unsure, unsettling. And part of it can be the political environment and the economic environment, et cetera. Those are all things. But this was more about as much about internal uncertainty and being unsettled. And as I probe further, it really came down to the fact that for the first time in their life, there's no roadmap. It's not programmed. You know what it always was? It was that you went to college and you had a family and you had a career. And then there was this big plot of time called retirement. But of course, everyone's so busy in those years and a lot of people are just human beings. We don't think a lot about the future. We just sort of go along and life happens. And sometimes we influence things and sometimes we don't. But all of a sudden there's kind of standstill and it can be harsh. There was one person I interviewed who had experienced some pretty blatant ageism at work. He's someone who's very athletic and really like a very energetic guy. But his boss said to him, "Gee, you've been working for so long, you must be tired." And that was one of different comments that were made. And I know that Patty Temple Rocks, I listened to her interview and it was great. You know, just these sort of ways that you're like, wow, these are subtle kinds of ageist comments. And it can also be internalized. So what happens is that we tend to internalize what society tells us we should feel, and we can begin to limit ourselves. So that all leads to a diminished sense of personal agency, which I can talk more about.
That's interesting, personal agency. So what exactly is it and why is it so important?
So personal agency is the term that, it's funny, once you hear it, you begin to see it a lot more. And a number of people have commented on that to me. And there's different definitions. The psychologist Albert Bandura said agency is believing that you can have a hand in the direction that your life takes. And I like that because we can't control everything in life. And agency is always about sort of working with other people's sense of agency. But the point is that we can all actively influence our lives to some extent. And having a sense of or sort of feeling or owning your sense of agency is seeing impediments as obstacles, but not as limitations. So another great metaphor is being in the driver's seat of your life. So when you have agency, you're in the driver's seat of your life. So the travel analogy comes up a lot here, but you're figuring out where you're going. You're figuring out at what speed you're going. You're figuring out what paths you take, what roads you take. Are you going to follow GPS? Are you going to, you know, go a back way that you know? And it's the opposite of being in the passenger seat where you are completely at the whim of whoever is behind the wheel and you might be able to offer a suggestion, but you're not actively in charge. So I really like that metaphor and it seems to fit well. And it's important because having a sense of agency is really directly tied to our life satisfaction because deciding where we're going to go and how fast we're going to go and what routes we're going to take is linked to our deepest desires and our motivations and our sense of our uniqueness. So it helps us be happier. We may not always get what we want, but we have a sense that we are of where we're trying to head. So that's how I would describe agency and its importance. I would just say, you know, there's a great example of agency. I mean, there's all around us, but in the news, of course, a very sad passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And what a model of agency she was. And just thinking about that, not seeing impediments as obstacles, but not limitations, you know, if you read about her, how she had a lot of obstacles in her path as a woman in, you know, growing up when she did and not being able to get a job and not being able to go to law school and different things. But she figured out her own way how to get around them. And one thing that's been talked a lot about too is that she was defiant about not retiring, right? People publicly called for her to step down and she was not having it. And that takes agency because the pressure can be huge. And a lot of what we talk about when we think about agency is that the very real social norms and social pressures and social reaction from family and friends and society that we can face. So I'll just wrap up by just saying that in my research that I did, and I found this in academic research, is that it is a fact that we can begin to lose a sense of personal agency or being in the driver's seat of our life in our 50s and 60s. So in the survey that I had done, there's a statement, do you agree or disagree? I'm in the driver's seat of my life. And women 45 to 54, 50% strongly agreed with that statement compared to only a third of women 75 to 84 who strongly agreed. So people themselves can feel a loss of agency for a bunch of reasons, which is a problem because it can make us feel unfulfilled and bitter.
So how does personal agency then evolve over the life course for both men and women?
So it's interesting. So I'll talk about men and women born in the 1950s and before, because that's a group who is now entering their 60s and older. So think about agency, we're all born with the ability to have agency. So babies have agencies when they cry to be held or to be fed, they're letting someone know that they're having a hand in the direction their life takes. They want to be fed. Will someone feed them? That remains to be said, but they're exercising agency. But then as we grew up, and particularly in those generations in the 50s and before, social norms and gender norms kick in. You learn it's not polite to cry to get food or to get, you know, throw a tantrum to get what you want. So you begin to conform. Now, many boys in that generation in, you know, the 30s, 40s, 50s were raised to have agency as they are today. It's more of a birthright for women, for men socially. There's this expectation that they're going to go out into the world and take charge and be their own agent and be the head of the household. And a lot of these ideas that go along with agency, it's being independent and strong and autonomous and courageous. So that was more part of the culture. But girls raised in the 50s and before many were not raised to have agency. They're raised to put a premium on getting along with people, which can hinder one's sense of agency because you're thinking more about what other people expect you to do or want you to do than what you want to do. And girls were raised to be more deferential and not to ask for too much. And then that changed because second wave feminism happened and social norms changed and women's liberation, da da da. The girls grew up to be women who had agency and they raised a family, which takes a lot of agency to be in the driver's seat of managing a household. They had careers. Mm-hmm. They learned how to be in the driver's seat. But just at the point where women really gained a sense of confidence about being in the driver's seat to the point where it's just automatic, like it is for men, these different factors threaten a sense of agency. And it can be something you're aware of or not aware of. So there's, you know, a very strong cultural expectation that both men and women will kind of be grandma and grandpa, and, you know, they'll be the ones that will be cuddly and focused on grandchildren. And that's a really important role in our society. But it's a problem for any group when that's the only thing that's really focused on. And then there are these gender expectations. So I interviewed one woman who was a very successful professional and her husband was as well. But when they got into their 70s and were doing consulting, he was offered paid consulting and she was expected to be a volunteer. Huh. So those are really old ideas about women being the volunteer force, da da da. But these things chip away at a sense of agency because let's face it, when you're getting paid for something, it gives you a sense of confidence and that can give you more of a sense of agency and control, da da da. So these things happen with age. Health impairments can chip away at our sense of agency because it may challenge our sense of strength or independence. If there's some kind of physical impairment that makes us feel less strong than we were before. Difficulty getting a job certainly can be a big factor where you feel like you don't have that option. So all of this can make us feel like we've kind of shifted. We've given up the driver's seat to somebody else and we're in the passenger seat of our lives. And I've talked about women, the same thing can happen to men. I talked about the grandparent thing, but just in general, there's a lot of social pressure to kick back and relax and not be really doing something super like forging a whole new path. There's a lot of shoulds in our society associated with aging that are very anti-agency. There's a lot of social pressure to become invisible. And then that can be made even worse, you know, with what we've seen happen with COVID and, okay, boomer, you know, different factors that can chip away an individual's sense of having value in society. And the real problem is when we begin to buy into it, because that's then becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's what happens a lot. So we need to really, all of a sudden, other people making decisions for us. So it's really about fighting that narrative and being very conscious about it. Because once again, otherwise we can become angry and bitter and unfulfilled. There's lots of stories like this, unfortunately.
And that's not where we want to end up at all. That's for sure. So you mentioned this phenomenon of really internalizing these societal pressures. What are some of the other things that influence a sense of personal agency?
So that's a great question, because as I said, everyone's born with the ability to influence, to have a hand in the direction their life takes. But as my research has progressed, I've been able to learn more about factors that go beyond social and cultural factors I have talked about. So first of all, some people can be more agentic. They can be more, have more agency by virtue of their temperament, right? We're all born with different personalities, and some people are more take charge types and they're more doers, and other people like to hang back and be observers. And that can influence our sense of agency, just our temperament, our personality, sort of going in. It doesn't determine whether you can have agency, it's just that it can influence your sense of being in the driver's seat. Families can make a big difference. So I talked about women growing up in the 50s, and it was a largely that there was a majority Caucasian population, and these social norms that were very strong about women going with the flow and being deferential and all of that. But in fact, family cultures can be really different in this way. And so, for example, African-American women can have a stronger sense of agency because they learned early on as a young Black girl that the cards were stacked against them. You know, some had moms who said, look, life is not fair. You need to stand up for yourself. You need to be looking out for your own best interests, which is all about agency. So they learn to look out for themselves and stand up for themselves. That's great. Some women grew up, there can be different factors that are just part of the family path, family history. So could be that there was a financial hardship. And maybe the mom didn't have a lot of agency, so said to her daughters, you need to be really able to take care of yourself. So maybe there's a family situation where the dad wasn't able to provide or left or something. The mom says to the daughter, you need to be able to provide for yourself. You know, don't depend on someone else to do that for you. That can give a young girl a strength, a sense of agency, and looking out for her own best interest, even though it was for an unfortunate reason. But hardship can be really character strengthening and give us a strong sense of independence, even though it's painful at the time. And then, of course, in some family cultures, you know, girls are just raised to be more independent than in others. They're raised to be strong and independent as the boys. But the thing about these family cultures is you can be in a family where you gain a sense of agency, you're kind of taught that's the way, but then society is still going to be out there pushing at you and pushing their expectations on you. So that can really help, but we all have to be prepared to recognize the stronger social forces that can just keep social norms, because that's just the way society works. So we all need to understand that we're all born with the potential to influence the direction our life takes, but some of us may need to work on it more than others. We need to be conscious and not unconscious about what's happening, because factors and other people, et cetera, can consciously or unconsciously undermine our sense of agency in later life.
It's interesting, the generational differences too. I was thinking about it this morning, actually. So our oldest daughter, who lives in Boston, is visiting us for a work event locally. But it brought me back to about 20 years ago when she was in the first grade or something. And she would always ask me, so what'd you do at work today? And that particular day, I said, well, we had this big meeting, our company's diversity task force. Mm. Oh, what's that about? What are you trying to do? So I explained it. And she said, wait a minute. That would be like at my school, having the boys be in charge. That's pretty dumb. We would never do that. I thought, well, yes, that was a good summary. But it really does influence how you can see things.
Yes, absolutely. And the generational thing is really big. We see what's happening now with the way that people are raised in the generations, you know, prior to, say, the 1960s. And it's going to be very interesting to see how things play out in the future.
Absolutely. And it was interesting that you brought up Ruth Bader Ginsburg, because that really got me thinking about how she's a role model in so many ways. And one of them is really her workout routine, which I thought was impressive given her age, and that got quite a following. But it leads me to wonder, what can people do to strengthen agency?
That's a great question. And it's funny that you talk about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, because I would say have the right heroes. So I saw this quote yesterday, I think, in the newspaper, and it was actually Warren Buffett said it. So I'll give him the credit for that. He was talking about Chuck Feeney, who was the philanthropist who believed in giving while living, and he gave away his entire fortune. He's now, I believe, about 89, and he just finished doing it the other day, and he's living in a small apartment, and he was head of, his money went through Atlantic Philanthropies. And Warren Buffett was a big fan of Chuck, or he is a big fan of Chuck Feeney, because Chuck is still alive, but he said, if you have the right heroes in life, you're 90% of the way home. And I think when it comes to having agency or exercising our agency and strengthening it, it's really helpful to have those heroes who can show us the way. Those are typically people who are going against the grain. And, you know, I mentioned that my hero was Arthur. He told me, I remember him saying this 90th birthday party to a large group of people. He said, people are constantly saying to me, when are you going to retire? When are you going to retire? And he said, I'm never going to retire. So it takes a degree of strength, yeah, an agency to go against the grain. So he's my hero. And I think finding people like that, who, if that's the path that you want to take with agency, there's no judgment on agency. You can have agency by deciding, I do want to focus on my golf game. I do want to spend anything as agency. It's just about making sure it's tied to what you want to do and not letting society too much influence that or your peer groups. So I think it's a matter of finding the right heroes for the kind of life that you want to live. And then the second thing I would say is the old Carnegie Hall, practice, practice, practice. How do I get there? Doing this research on agency has helped me think more about agency, of course, in my own life and mm-hmm. how I can. And so agency begets agency. In other words, it's made me be more conscious, take more risk, because agency requires bravery. Not in all cases. It can just be, I'm going to start a new exercise routine. That doesn't need to be brave, but some of the stakes are higher. And so I think it's important to be always thinking when you hit any kind of obstacle, it doesn't have to be 24/7, but when you hit an obstacle, think, how can I have agency in this situation? I may not be able to completely steer it the way I want, but how can I really think about what's happening and have a hand in influencing the direction it takes? Sometimes it's only changing your mindset, but it's having agency by saying, I'm going to be in the driver's seat in terms of how I manage through this and how I get to where I'm going to go. And then agency, you know, say an agency muscle, it's like any others. You use your muscle and that helps it grow and remain strong. And then we have muscle memory and it just gets, agency begets agency. So that's how I think about it.
Appreciate that. So we met when we both were taking our last class in the master's program at USC on mindful aging. And I've talked about that class several times on our podcast in passing. We had such a great professor, Dr. B, Leah Boudrin, and it was such a great experience. And since then, I've continued my study and noticed the research has shown that we are all still getting older. And I'm wondering, in the spirit of mindful aging, what advice would you offer people on how they can age mindfully?
I would say that, you know, the beauty of that class, which included students of all ages, so students in their 20s and 30s and 40s and up, was that it was time to reflect on her own life course. And most people don't do that. I had certainly never done it before. And some people may keep journals. I don't even do anything like that. But once again, we're all busy and we haven't always taken the time or had the incentive to take stock. So in that class, we, as you know, had to do a biography of sorts of us, or an autobiography of our lives, and find the themes. And then we had to do a mission statement for our lives ahead. And I found that to be super powerful because we don't take the time to do it. And so to use that travel analogy again, or the driver's seat, it becomes pretty automatic where we're headed and sort of where we've been and where we're headed, because we tend to just go along lots of times without being super intentional about it. So I wish there were more programs available, to accessible programs to help people do this. But I would advise people to do those kinds of exercises themselves, even if they don't have the advantage of a guided master's program class like we did, but to do an autobiography of their life and look for the common themes, and then think clearly, as clearly as possible, about what they want to do for their lives ahead, and maybe have a friend or a mentor give feedback. And by the way, I think we need mentors at any age. You know, there's this idea that once again, things kind of stop. And once you get to a certain age, you're the one who is only giving advice to other people, or as we talked about with the loneliness epidemic, you're the one who's other people are looking out for. But we all need these people that we can trust to help guide us along the way. And I would advise doing those kinds of exercises. And I hope that there will be more programs like that in the future that are accessible to people. I think we've talked about the university programs, the Encore programs, which, you know, are such a powerful idea to help people in a very structured way find their path forward. But at this point, there aren't enough of those programs, and they can have a higher price tag. So I'm interested in helping to make this kind of advice more equally accessible to people of all kinds of backgrounds.
Makes sense. And Cindy, finally, I understand that you're taking on a new additional role. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I would love to. I will be heading up HelpAge USA, and HelpAge USA is an affiliate of a global network that advances the formal statement is it advances the inclusion and the well-being and dignity of older people in low and middle income countries. There isn't a lot of attention to this population. You had talked about the fact that people are living longer, and this is a phenomenon. And what's interesting, though, that needs more attention is that this is happening all around the world. So, for example, in low-income countries, as the kind of terrible health challenges like malaria, et cetera, are addressed, and these kind of infectious diseases and maternal health issues go away, people are living longer, and now they're having the same kinds of issues that we face in the more developed world, you know, the non-communicable diseases like diabetes, et cetera. But the point is that by mid-century, the forecast is that the number of people 60 plus will grow from 1 billion to 2 billion, and most of those people will be in low and middle income countries. That's a lot of people. And here's the clincher: the systems aren't there. So we learned in our master's program about a phenomenon called structural lag, where, as it applies to aging, population is aging, but the systems haven't adapted. So we have different suboptimal housing options for people. And there's just, you know, the whole, certainly the workplace and all of these are very much behind the way that the population has changed in terms of people living longer and living more healthily. So the same situation is happening, but much more dramatically in low and middle income countries that have been many of them very poor. Now, like in Latin America, many of those countries have moved into the middle income, but there's still people at the bottom of the economic pyramid that are completely impoverished in many countries in Latin America. And then you have older people in Africa who are maybe taking care of grandchildren because the middle generation was wiped out by HIV/AIDS and have, you know, live on a dollar a day. In Asia, it has a different story because there we really see the effects of population aging, where, you know, in Japan and China, you have people like one out of every four people is over the age of 60. And in China, where they have the one child policies, there isn't the family structure. So there are, it varies on around the world, but basically in a lot of countries, like for example, many countries in Africa, if you're over 50, you're not even included. This goes back to surveys in my business, but you're not included in demographic surveys, population surveys that determine how healthcare dollars are spent. So if you're not included, you're not counted, you're not getting those, you know, the money isn't being allocated to that. Many countries don't have a pension system. We have Social Security here, we have other safety nets, but many people spent their whole lives, say, as farmers in the informal sectors, we call it. There's no pension system. They're completely lacking in income as they get older, maybe can't work in the field, but they may have grandchildren to care for, or they want to be able to contribute. They may not be able to get loans because of age discrimination. And there's a perception that older people in other countries are revered. That's a very common myth, that the families take care of them. But the world has changed. And in many parts of the world, the younger people are moving to the big cities to get a job. And the older people are left behind in villages and maybe once again taking care of grandchildren, but needing to, you know, I met one older woman in Myanmar whose son had gone to the big city 10 years before that, and she had not heard from him since. It's not that he doesn't want to, but, you know, poverty is a tough thing, and maybe he could not send money home or could not do the things he wanted. So the family structure is not what it used to be in other countries. And so there's many issues, but the kind of the overarching topic of agency is not only relevant, in some ways even more relevant, because older people in low middle income countries need to have extra agency. And sometimes it's collective agency. You can group together with other people to try to change systems. But it's really important you have agency to try to influence the direction your life takes, because the systems are not there to support an aging population. So these are kinds of issues. And once again, we're connected to this global network, and Help Age International was founded in London, was founded in the early 80s to be focused on issues of older people in developing countries. And so as an affiliate, we work with them and with our partners to do advocacy and raise money for programs to change some of these dynamics and help create stronger systems for older people.
Appreciate all that you do. And thanks for all that you share with us. Very important information on how to stay or get back in the driver's seat. And you showed in many ways, both individually and globally, collectively. It's such an important topic. So thanks, Cindy. It was great to talk with you once again.
Great. Thanks so much, Joe. Appreciate it.
It was great to catch up with Cindy Cox-Roman today. And I really appreciated many of the key points that she brought out in our conversation. And I'd like to share a few of my takeaways that I noted. First is her findings from her ongoing research with older adults that people who have had a successful, happy life, when they enter their 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond, they describe hitting a period of untime, as she calls it. There's a great deal of uncertainty. There's a great deal of unpredictability. And we can certainly all relate to that in the broader context of what we're living through today together. But there's something about that time of life where it may occur at different points for different people, but it's certainly a common theme. And then she talked about really what might be the solution. And I would agree with that. And that's the getting back in the driver's seat of the direction for your life through taking more personal agency. And she referenced the work of Albert Bandura, psychologist at Stanford, who we talked offline, I think in his 90s now, she mentioned. I've recently gone deep into his work for a book that I'm working on in one of the chapters. And it really is powerful, a powerful concept, powerful research behind it. And it's really about believing that you can influence the course of events, the things that can happen, regardless of what's going on around you. And I think that's a very empowering and important trait to build. She also talked about some things that you can do to become better practiced at personal aging, how you can build that competency in yourself, build that ability, strengthen that ability. And she also talked about what you're up against in terms of the societal influences that really have an effect on all of us but different for men and women, it appears. And then one thing that jumped out to me was her comment, quoting Warren Buffett, about choose the right heroes. That is great advice. And we can look around us for people throughout our lives that have played that role, where we can see they've really exercised personal agency, or we can look to public figures that we really admire and that resonate with us in that regard. And then finally, she advised us to step back, take some time to take stock, reflect on your life. What are the big themes? How have you exercised personal agency in the past, and how can you use it today and going forward? She mentioned an autobiographical exercise that we had used at USC in master's program, and I will find a version of that to post in the show notes if you'd like to take that. Highly recommend it as well. Really gives you a sense of what are the themes and what you can build on and use those takeaways going forward. Thank you so much for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, and we hope to connect again soon.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.